Well, hey there, family. Welcome to this week's edition of Steve Reads. Y'all done messed up and said you'd listen to me read the back of a cereal box, a vitamin bottle, or the tea leaves proclaiming the coming of our dark and shadowy Lord. Well, not doing any of that this week. This week, we're going to visit with one of my favorite playwrights of all time, reach back into my teaching days again, and talk to you about Mr. Arthur Miller. Now, Miller is a divisive figure and probably not the greatest dude in the world, but I don't know that he was completely terrible. But he wrote a lot of my favorite plays, Death of a Salesman, All My Sons, and today's object, The Crucible. Now, don't groan at me like a bunch of ninth graders, because The Crucible is awesome. It's Miller's big colonial witchcraft, fuck you, to Joseph McCarthy and the communist Red Scare blacklisting era. And this was him kind of putting that in a form and winning a bunch of stuff with it because it's a great play. The movie version with Daniel Day-Lewis and Winona Ryder and John Hurt is fantastic. Arthur Miller actually wrote the screenplay for that, and he adds some things in and fills in some gaps that aren't in the play, some for the good of it and some for, okay, we didn't need that. But it's there, and I highly recommend it. If you're not familiar with The Crucible, it deals with the Salem witch trials, uses actual historical language and names, much like we do here on Old Gods of Appalachia, but then, of course, twists them and changes them and writes stories out of existing material. In the story, Abigail Williams is a young girl who is accusing, with her cohorts, accusing women of the village of having deals with the devil and being witches when she and her friends are caught performing witchcraft with a slave named Tituba in the woods. And in the play, we never really know what they're doing other than running around naked, chanting, being good witches. And it's intimated that Abby drank a charm of blood to kill John Proctor's wife, John Proctor being our local farmer daddy, played by Daniel Day-Lewis in the movie version, who at some point in the recent past had an affair with his young housemaid, Abigail Williams, and when his wife suspected, he confessed and ended the affair and has been trying to mend his marriage and his life ever since. He bears a tremendous amount of shame about what he did when his house and his bed were cold. His wife had had their two sons and things at home were whatever. So like many men do, he yielded to his lusts and had an affair with the young housemaid, and of course regretted it because John Proctor is a good and decent man who fucked up. And when he will not return Abigail's advances, she turns the witch accusations in their direction. But we're not there yet. We're going to be examining the beginning of Act Two. The Proctor house is still very tense. It is still airs of suspicion and lots of just really toxic attitudes and things. This could be an example of polyamory could have saved everything, but it's the time of the Salem witch trials, and we're dealing with a Puritan mindset, so that's not going to happen either. But so let's jump in. Act Two of The Crucible by Arthur Miller. Content warning, there is mention of the killing and eating of a rabbit. It is not graphic, but it's there. The common room of the Proctor's house, 8 days later. At the right is a door opening on the fields outside. The fireplace is at the left, and behind it a stairway leading upstairs. It is the low, dark, and rather long living room of the time. As the curtain rises, the room is empty. From above, Elizabeth is heard softly singing to the children. Presently, the door opens, and John Proctor enters, carrying his gun. He glances about the room as he comes toward the fireplace, then halts for an instant as he hears her singing. He continues on to the fireplace, leans the gun against the wall as he swings a pot out of the fire and smells it. Then he lifts out the ladle and tastes. He is not quite pleased. He reaches to a cupboard, takes a pinch of salt, and drops it into the pot. As he is tasting again, her footsteps are heard on the stair. He swings the pot into the fireplace and goes to a basin and washes his hands and face. Elizabeth enters.
What keeps you so late? It's almost dark.
We're planting out to the forest edge.
Oh, you're done then?
Aye, the farm is seeded. The boys asleep?
They will be soon.
As she goes to the fireplace and proceeds to ladle up stew in a dish. Pray now for a fair summer.
Aye.
Are you well today?
I am.
She brings a plate to the table and indicating the food.
It is a rabbit.
Proctor, going to the table. Oh, is it? In Jonathan's trap?
No, She walked into the house this afternoon. I found her sitting in the corner like she'd come to visit.
Oh, that's a good sign, just walking in.
Pray God it hurt my heart to strip her, poor rabbit. She sits and watches him taste it.
Hmm, it's well seasoned.
Elizabeth blushing with pleasure. I took great care. She's tender?
Aye. He eats. She watches him. I think we'll see green fields soon. It's warm as blood beneath the clods.
That's well.
Proctor eats, then looks up. If the crop is good, I'll buy George Jacob's heifer. How would that please you?
Aye, it would.
Proctor, with a grin. I mean to please you, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, it's hard to say. I know it, John.
He gets up, goes to her, kisses her, and she receives it. And with a certain disappointment, he returns to the table.
Proctor, as gently as he can. Cider?
Elizabeth, with a sense of reprimanding herself for having forgot.
Oh, aye.
She gets up and goes and pours a glass for him. He now arches his back. This farm's a continent when you go foot by foot dropping seeds in it.
Elizabeth, coming with the cider. It must be.
Proctor drinks a long draught, then putting his glass down. You ought to bring some flowers in the house.
Elizabeth. Oh, I forgot. I will tomorrow.
It's winter in here yet. On Sunday, let you come with me and we'll walk the farm together. I never seen such a load of flowers on the earth. With good feeling, he goes and looks up at the sky through the open doorway. Lilacs have a purple smell. Lilac is the smell of nightfall, I think. Massachusetts is a beauty in the spring.
Aye, it is.
There is a pause. She is watching him from the table as he stands there, absorbing the night. It is as though she would speak, but cannot. Instead now, she takes up his plate and glass and fork and goes with them to the basin. Her back is turned to him. He turns to her and watches her. A sense of their separation rises. I think you're sad again. Are you?
Elizabeth, she doesn't want friction, and yet she must.
You come so late, I thought you'd gone to Salem this afternoon.
Why? I have no business in Salem.
You did speak of going earlier this week.
Proctor, he knows what she means. I thought better of it since.
Mary Warren's there today.
Why'd you let her? You heard me forbid her go to Salem anymore.
I couldn't stop her.
Proctor, holding back a full condemnation of her. It is a fault. It is a fault, Elizabeth. You are the mistress here, not Mary Warren.
She's frightened all my strength away.
How may that mouse frighten you, Elizabeth? You,
it is a mouse no more. I forbid her go, and she raises up her chin like the daughter of a prince and says to me, I must go to Salem, Goody Proctor. I'm an official of the court.
Court? What court?
Aye, it is a proper court they have now. They've sent four judges out of Boston, she says, weighty magistrates of the general court, and at the head sits the deputy governor of the province.
Proctor, astonished. Why, she's mad.
I would to God she were. There'll be 14 people in the jail now, she says.
Proctor simply looks at her, unable to grasp it.
And they'll be tried, and the court have power to hang them too, she says.
Proctor, scoffing but without conviction. No, they'd never hang.
The deputy governor promised hanging if they'll not confess, John. The town's gone wild, I think. She speak of Abigail, and I thought she were a saint to hear her. Abigail brings the other girls into court, and where she walks, the crowd will part like the sea for Israel, and folks are brought before them, and if they scream and howl and fall to the floor, the person's clapped in the jail for bewitching them.
Proctor, wide-eyed. Oh, it is a black mischief. I think you must go to Salem, John.
He turns to her. I think so. I think you must tell them it is a fraud.
Proctor, thinking beyond this. Aye, it is. It is surely.
Let you go to Ezekiel Cheever. He knows you well. And tell them what she said to you last week in her uncle's house. She said it had naught to do with witchcraft, did she not?
Proctor, in thought. Aye. She did. She did. Now a pause.
Elizabeth, quietly fearing to anger him by prodding, God forbid you keep that from the court, John. I think they must be told.
Proctor, quietly struggling with his thought, that they must. They must. It's a wonder they do so believe her.
I would go to Salem now, John. Let you go tonight.
I'll think on it.
Elizabeth, with her courage now,
you cannot keep it, John.
Proctor, angering, I know I cannot keep it. I say I will think on it.
Elizabeth, hurt and very coldly, good. Let you think on it, then. She stands and starts to walk out of the room.
I am only wondering how I may prove what she told me, Elizabeth. If the girl's a saint now, I think it not easy to prove she's a fraud. And the town gone so silly? I mean, she told it to me in a room alone. I have no proof.
But you were alone with her?
Proctor stubbornly, for a moment, alone. Why, then, it is not as you told me.
Proctor, his anger rising. For a moment, I say. The others come in soon after.
Elizabeth, quietly. She has suddenly lost all faith in him. Do as you wish, then.
She starts to turn. Woman, she turns to him. I'll not have your suspicion any more.
Elizabeth, a little loftily.
I'll not have it.
Then let you not earn it.
Proctor, with a violent undertone. You doubt me yet?
Elizabeth, with a smile to keep her dignity. John, if it were not Abigail that you must go to hurt, would you falter now?
I think not. Now look you, I see what I see, John.
Proctor, with solemn warning. You will not judge me more, Elizabeth. I have good reason to think before I charge fraud on Abigail, and I will think on it. Let you look to your own improvement before you judge your husband any more. I have forgot Abigail, and
I,
spare me. You forget nothing and forgive nothing. Learn charity, woman. I have gone tiptoe in this house all 7 months since she is gone. I have not moved from here to there without, I think, to please you. And still, an everlasting funeral marches round your heart. I cannot speak, but I am doubted. Every moment judged for lies as though I come into a court when I come into this house.
John, you are not open with me. You saw her with a crowd, you said. And now...
You say, I'll plead my honesty no more, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, now she would justify herself.
John, I am only no more. I should have roared you down when you told me your suspicion, but I wilted. And like a Christian, I confessed. Some dream I had must have mistaken you for God that day, but you're not. You're not, and let you remember it. Let you look sometimes for goodness in me and judge me not.
I do not judge you. The magistrate sits in your heart that judges you. I never thought you but a good man, John, with a smile now, only somewhat bewildered.
Proctor, laughing bitterly, oh, Elizabeth, your justice would freeze beer. And we'll stop there. I hope you've enjoyed this reading from Act 2 of The Crucible. If you care to check it out, as I said, you can probably find the movie version on Netflix or Amazon or somewhere. It's very, very good. It deals with mass hysteria. It deals with just blind accusation. It deals with marital infidelity. It's good old witch trial stuff. And the beauty, I'm not going to get into it here, but the beauty of all of this is that all the hysteria starts because they start with abusing Tichib of the slave who the white girls had coerced into teaching them whatever it is she teaches them. And they beat her to get her to confess. And when she confesses, she tells them that the devil came to her and showed her all the white people that work for him and how the devil wanted her to kill her master. But, oh, no, she didn't. She wouldn't. And it's this twist that Tichib puts on it that sends all of these slave-owning white people into self-destroying mass hysteria, which, again, is allegory for the Red Scare and the blacklisting stuff, Joseph McCarthy, etc. You can read up on it anywhere you want. It's one of the most famous plays in all of history. It's one of Arthur Miller's best. And I hope you've enjoyed it for this edition of Steve Reads. Talk to you soon, family. Talk to you real soon.